What do you get when three comic and entertainment enthusiasts join together to discuss the topics that interest us all? Something that is truly larger than life. What's on the page?
On the screen.
And on our minds. Is front and center here on Larger Than Life with Dan Totora and co-hosts TJ Yeldon and Brian Yeldon.
Welcome here to Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora on LargerThanLifeDT.com and on the app LargerThanLifeDT.podbean.com/mobile. That's LargerThanLifeDT.podbean.com/mobile. Happy to be sharing with you today my conversation with Larry Hama, the man who brought the G.I. Joe characters to life. Made them more than just faceless characters, gave them personalities, gave them a face, and gave us what we have today with the G.I. Joes that we know and love so much. Obviously, Snake Eyes is very, very, very well known, but so are the cast of characters along with Snake Eyes. Larry Hama also has a big responsibility in keeping the Avengers alive and keeping Wolverine alive. Back in the day, before we had these movies, before it was mainstream and everywhere, these characters needed help in the comic book world, and Larry Hama lent his time and lent his ability, his talents, to making sure that characters like the Avengers stuck around, and Wolverine kept clawing his way to the top, and of course, G.I. Joe kept strong in their respect as well. It is an honor and a privilege to welcome back, once again, Larry Hama, and here is our conversation right here on Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora.
Well, Larry, looking at your opportunities at, you know, different Comic-Cons, obviously you came up to Syracuse for ours, you've been in New York City, you're here now with one that's in its first year. What can you say about, you know, kind of your overall feelings on coming out to Comic-Cons and, you know, what it means at this point in your career?
What do you mean?
Like how you view it, you know, after everything that you've done, you know, people that come up to you with old comics, the experience of seeing people dressed up as characters that you obviously helped create, sustain. What does that whole experience mean from the eyes of the creator, so to speak?
Well, it took a bit getting used to. It's still kind of hard to believe. I don't know. I never think about it that much, really. I just always take stuff as it comes. I never think that anything is forever, and I never think that, you know, anything is going to last. Impermanence is the state of the universe. So, it's just a matter of accepting it.
When you look at the fact, like you said, you know, nothing will last forever, but the characters that you've created, like Snake Eyes, everything that you've done with G.I. Joe, what you've done with Wolverine and the Avengers, these are characters that, you know, people still come up and ask you to draw, they still ask you to continue to be a part of their world, these characters that you help bring to life. So as much as things may not last forever, it seems like your work is something that has withstood the test of time. And did you see that when you started creating these characters? Did you feel like their longevity was going to be there?
Never. I mean, well, because, you know, I was the generation when we came into comics, we never thought of it as being anything more than, you know, an ephemeral form, you know, it's stuff that, because let's face it, in the early 70s and thereabouts, you know, that nobody thought that any of this stuff was ever going to really be worth it. I mean, in the early 70s, you know, the art returns people at Marvel would try to give the pages back to the artist, and they would say, well, what am I going to do with them? You know, literally. I mean, that's what Jack Kirby told Flo Steinberg. You know, this is, I got this from the horse's mouth. You know, Jack said, I got no room for him. You know, he was, the guys that cranked out pages like mad, you know, they would have been out of room in like 2 years. So it came as a total surprise to everybody, you know, and I don't know. And then who knows where it's gonna go, because, you know, with the digital age, there's like no more originals. So, you know, where does that go? You know, it's all in a state of change, so, and you can't predict it. That's what's also good about it.
When you see things in a state of change, but know that characters like Snake Eyes that you're working on right now have had so much respect and appreciation over the years, do you ever think this character would get lost in the digital age and with different things that are happening? Or do you feel that he's obviously going to live on and be a character that, you know, withstands the test of time and will always be something appreciated, knowing how much the character's loved and has been loved?
No, I don't count on anything. It's impossible to say what is going to stand the test of time. You know, this stuff that we thought was going to be, you know, around forever, and it's just gone. You know, and nobody, you know. I mean, do people under 20 even care about who the Beatles are? I mean, in the 60s, you couldn't imagine them not, you know, being up front, you know, and now they're just sort of like a footnote, you know. It's really impossible to tell. And pop culture, nobody can predict it.
When you mention Jack Kirby, and you talked about, you know, obviously, in a couple weeks, you know, if he was given the pages back, his house would be full. Did you know anybody that could crank out as many pages and create as quickly as Jack Kirby?
Gil Kane. He was pretty fast. A lot of the old, that generation was very fast because it was strictly page rate. You know, there were no royalties, there were nothing else. So if you could crank out, you know, 20, 30 pages a week, you know, you could make a living. I remember, you know, Gil Kane once dropped by Wally Wood Studio and he said, my boy, anybody who can't do 25 pages a week should just get out of the business. And Woody was totally devastated for weeks. You know, like, oh my God, Gil Kane can do 25 pages. I can barely do a page a day. And really stuck in his craw. This is a guy who used to, like, get the Peanuts script every day and count the number of lines, you know, in the script. You know, he'd go, you know, oh my God, there's only, you know, 67 lines in today's speech. He's getting away with murder, you know. And then one day, a couple of weeks later, Gray Morrill dropped by the studio, you know, and Woody tells him about Gil Kane, you know, and Gray says, oh, Gil's just, you know, bullshitting me. He can't do 25 pages. And you know, Woody was very relieved. But, you know, maybe there are some people that can do 25 pages a week. I don't know.
When you look back, and Neil Adams was talking about it as well, that, you know, DC and Marvel for a time thought, okay, you know, maybe we'll be around for another year, and we're kind of a sinking ship, and this thing isn't going to take off. It's not going to last.
What? The entire business?
Well, that DC, when Congress kind of came after certain things, and they thought they were going to close up shop, Neil said that DC thought they were going to be like a year, and then that was it. They were going to kind of just let everything go until it was gone. Do you remember that time? Do you remember that period of the belief that comics were just going to be obsolete and go away?
Well, I always thought that. I never thought it, you know, it always seemed to me like everything was on borrowed time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no, I never assumed that the good times would last. That was always, you know, got another year left, and that's it. But they lasted a surprisingly long time. But, you know, it was a good thing that I felt that, because I didn't, you know, I didn't just spend the money. I put it away or put it into real estate or whatever. And, you know, lots of people thought, wow, this is going to last forever. I guess I'll buy that Corvette I always wanted, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, one day they woke up and, you know, the gravy train had pulled out of the station.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't really tell.
Looking back on the history and discussing different things like Jack Kirby, as well as obviously the, you know, the time of Stan Lee and Neil Adams and all the conversations you had and the people you were able to be around. We've spoken about it before, but what are some of the things that have stuck out to the most to you, or the people that have stuck out, you know, over time, where you look back and appreciated those conversations? Because, I mean, you are a man that knows a lot of different things. You and I have had a lot of conversations off the air about different things about this world. I mean, when you think about the people that have affected your life, who are some of those people that stuck out, or some of those conversations maybe that stuck out?
Well, a lot of my good friends are gone, you know. I was very close to Gray Morrow and Ed Davis. People I really miss. Wally Wood. People like that. Obviously, you know, Neil Adams had a lot of influence on me. You know, I still love the guy. You know? he's like my wacky uncle. But, you know, everybody has an effect on you, you know. it's they're all parts of the water of the river of life. You know, you just swim through it, and you get wet. Yes. You know. Sometimes it's hard to realize it, and lots of times most people don't even want to admit it. You know, but I think, and you don't appreciate it. You know, lots of times you don't appreciate people until they're gone. And you know, that makes you realize that, you know, that sometimes you should. That all you have, you know, is the people in your life. You don't, you know, when you go, you know, you got zip. You know, it's like the lowest destitute wino on the street at the moment of his death is exactly the same as some billionaire. You know, you got exactly the same. You know. Was the like the old you know, there's a Jewish legend about King Solomon. You know, they asked Solomon what is any man worth? You know, and he said, well, you know, what you're worth is 6 feet of dirt. You know, that's all you will ever own for the rest of eternity, you know. And everybody's equal in that way, you know. You know, it was like when Gray Morrow moved out to Pennsylvania, you know, it was like a long trek to get out there. And I just kept putting off going to visit him. And, you know, when he lived in Jersey, I could, you know, hop in my car and be there in like, you know, 40 minutes. And then one day he was gone, you know. And I go, well, what the heck did I do with that hour and a half or 2 hours? You know, that I saved myself by not driving out there. Watched a bad movie. You know, watched two episodes of a bad TV show. You know, and you total up all the time that you wasted doing stuff like that. Playing a bad video game. And you total that up against time that you could have spent with you know, people that mean stuff to you. You go, wow, that was really stupid. And yeah, that's I really totally believe that now. Too late in the game, but some things are never too late to learn. You could do something about it. You know, so I've also learned just to let stuff go. You know, that holding a grudge or, you know, keeping anger around, you know, withers your soul. You know, it's just all this negative energy. You know? The more you let all that stuff go and just, you know, get on with it, you know, the better off you are, and the more potent your own energy becomes, because it's not being dragged down by all this ugly luggage. That's about as metaphysical as I can get.
You had mentioned
Neil Adams is a crazy uncle for you and somebody who you've obviously been inspired by. What can you say about your relationship a little bit deeper of your relationship with Neil Adams and why he is that crazy uncle?
Well, you know, I sat next to him for a long time, you know, literally at the drawing table next to his. A place where not a lot of people wanted to sit. Because, it's frankly, a lot of people found it kind of intimidating, you know. I thought it was a great opportunity to learn, you know. And, you know, he's very generous in a lot of substantial ways. That he's generous with his time, that, you know, you take the time to, like, show you stuff, you know, and explain things. And lots of people just, you know, don't care about that. And he really cares about the work. You know, he really cares about the craft. And he really cares about, you know, all these. And he really cared about, you know, social justice as it applied to comics. You know, he pretty much funded the entire, you know, legal campaign to get Siegel and Schuster, you know, some juice out of D.C. Paid for that out of his own pocket. He was in the forefront of the campaign to get royalties for creators, considering that he did the huge bulk of his work for, you know, DC and Marvel, sold jillions of copies before there were royalties. He never got a cent for that stuff, you know. You know, any creator in comics who's ever received a royalty check or an incentive check, you know, should, you know, go over and thank Neil Adams. You know, instead, they just give him a lot of flack. But that's sort of to be expected.
As always, Larry, you know, I appreciate speaking with you, and some of our best conversations were off the air, just kind of talking about life. And one of the two things that I've taken from you when we did our Salt City Collecticon was sitting at dinner and you and Mark Dodson looking at me and saying, "You got to let things go," as you had said. And one of the things you said to me on stage at the Salt City Collecticon when you said, you know, you can't always be wondering what's going to happen next or looking at this, that, and the other thing. It's just when that train comes into the station, I'm going to be on it. And those two things stuck, and I think they're both very important, and I appreciate your time. I appreciate that knowledge and that wisdom that you have taken over the years, because you're absolutely right. You got to be ready for the train, and you got to be ready to let things go. So thank you.
Well, thank you.